have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way to life, I'm fighting and falling down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fight beside me. I read about some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the fog and dive deep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the fog and dark keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on Light Resistance Radio, well, .com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. The whole weekend, in fact, since Friday, we've heard very little about the shooting in Virginia Beach that answers a very fundamental question. Inquiring minds might like to know a little bit more about the shooter. Yeah, I was very surprised. You know, if he was a white supremacist, then he'd been on the internet and been saying various things about Jews or Negroes. Well, we'd have heard all about it. We'd heard hardly a thing. We heard a lot about the 12 people who'd been killed. 11 of them were employees at the public utilities center there. But we heard very, very little about the shooter. I found that very interesting. I thought, you know, what's going on here? You know, why haven't we heard more? And we heard that, you know, the place is devastated, and we didn't hear a lot, some kind of general stuff about him. He seemed to be well-liked. He was friendly. First reports were that the shooter had been fired, but it turns out that he had quit the very day of the, on Friday, of the shooting. Still don't know much about his motives. Well, you know, you may have wondered why we didn't hear anything about him, anything more. Well, I wondered. I had in the back of my mind, why would the... First of all, of course, the shooter is known. You know, it's not like he got away. There are various accounts. He either killed himself or was killed in a fairly intense
gun battle with police. Okay. Well, you might have known. The shooter was black. Yeah. Oh, where did I find that out? Well, I had to read the Daily Mail online. You may say, well, where's the Daily Mail from? Britain. That is the degree of the suppression of news in North America. So when Donald Trump talks about, says his to the media, you lie, you lie, you lie, you lie, this isn't an exaggeration. We are getting controlled information. I'll tell you why it's controlled. Because anything that shows privileged minorities in a bad light, it goes contrary to the narrative, which is almost all the bad things in our society are due to, yeah, you guessed it, whites, particularly white males. Okay, well, here's a little bit of what we picked up from the Daily Mail. Don't forget that's a British publication. The Virginia Beach gunman, 40, is a longtime city engineer who brushed his teeth and chatted to a colleague before indiscriminately shooting dead 12 people and dying in a police gun battle. He's black. Virginia Beach police say the shooter, a longtime current city Virginia Beach public utilities employee, gunned down 12 employees of the city in cold blood before police killed him following a long gun battle. Dwayne Craddock, that's his name, Dwayne Craddock, D-E, capital W, all one word, capital D-E, capital W-A-Y-N-E, Dwayne Craddock, 40, was wielding a legally purchased 45 caliber pistol when he gunned down his victims. Mayor Bobby Dyer called the massacre the most devastating day in Virginia Beach history. Okay, well, whether it was or not, but okay. President Trump sent his condolences. This is the crazed gunman who brushed his teeth and chatted to colleagues before indiscriminately shooting dead 12 innocent workers and dying in a police gun battle at the Virginia Beach Municipal Center on Friday. Dwayne Craddock has been described as a loner, as an ex-National Guardsman, and he worked for the city for 14 years. He was wielding two 45 caliber pistols, purchased legally in 2016 and 2018, during the massacre, while a search warrant for his home revealed two further legal handguns. Police refused to say whether there was an intended target or motive to the attack. Bizarrely, just moments before going on the shooting rampage, Craddock was spotted brushing his teeth in the office restrooms where he exchanged pleasantries with a colleague and wished him a good weekend. Joseph Scott, an engineering technician with the Department of Public Works, said he was in there brushing his teeth, which he always did after he ate. He said, hey, how are you doing? What are you doing this weekend? It was just a brief conversation. I'm sure I'm going to hear all kinds of things about Dwayne, but I liked him, Scott told CNN. I worked with him. He was what I thought a good person. When we were together, we would talk about family, friends, things like that we were going to do, trips we were going to take, and things like that. Scott said he worked with Craddock, whom a Virginia government source had called a disgruntled employee, for several years. Scott said he doesn't want the shooter painted as an evil person, adding that something happened, but it wasn't his nature. Well, whatever all that means. Incidentally, of the 12 dead, at least looking at visuals, I would say all but one is white. Virginia Beach City Manager Dave Hansen said at a press conference Saturday that Craddock was employed by the city for 15 years as an engineer, and that Craddock was still employed at the time of the shooting, meaning he possessed a security pass allowing him to access to non-public areas of the municipal building. Neither Hansen nor Virginia Chief James Carvera would comment on whether Craddock had faced any disciplinary proceedings at the time of the shooting. As of today, and this is late Monday, we're still looking, waiting to hear about any sort of motive. Some neighbors were not quite so positive about him. Neighbors told WAVY, that's a radio station, Craddock kept to himself. Cassetti Horan said, you heard him walking around. He would drop stuff at 2 a.m. and me and my roommate would try to figure out what he was doing. In the year I've been there, we maybe had three conversations, and that's about it. I know what Jimmy goes to. That's about it. I never saw him take out trash. I never saw him bring groceries in. Never saw people coming in or out. He was very to himself. So that's what I never said. Another neighbor, Clarissa Morell, age 22, told CNN that Craddock was in front of his apartment with two others smoking what smelled like marijuana 2 months ago. She added, "He catcalled me. He said, 'Oh, hey, girl, how are you doing?' Stuff like that. I was intimidated by him. I know when I'm uneasy about people." Well, a lot of this doesn't add up to much of an explanation, but very significantly, I feel it's very significant that we find that the shooter was black. And you're not surprised that the we have to be aware the press is involved in wholesale news management. The motto of the New York Times used to be, "All the news that's fit to print," whatever that means. But it would at least suggest superficially that they will give you the news, the whole truth as best they can. More recent, about 25 years ago, a disgruntled ex-staffer wrote that the motto really ought to be "All the news that fits." And I think that's really quite profound. All that fits a particular political agenda. And it's important to realize that. And the agenda is the radical change of our society. What they want to do is create pave the way for a non-white society. That's what they have planned. Part of this master plan is to run down the white race, make us constantly think badly about ourselves, and so on. And to accomplish that, part of what they have to do is to show minorities in good light, in a good light, and always show us in a bad light. A good friend of mine in Kentucky, Dinah Hopper, she calls herself Warrior D, sends me the odd bit of material, and she says, this is kind of quotation marks, "My boyfriend, I'm so proud of him. He's the only world leader standing for righteousness." She means Vladimir Putin. And I'm going to give, this is just quite a short speech by Putin. And I'm going to read, obviously, I doubt very many of you speak Russian, so I'm going to give you the translation, which luckily is presented to me. And this speech by Vladimir Putin deals with the moral crisis of Western states. He says, "We see that many Euro-Atlantic, or the West, states have taken a route where they deny or reject their own roots, including their Christian roots."
Фактически пошли по пути отказа от своих корней, в том числе и от христианских ценностей,
which form the basis of Western civilization. In these countries, the moral basis and any traditional identity are being denied. National, religious, cultural, and even gender identities are being denied or relativized. There, politics treats a family with many children as equal to a homosexual partnership, juridically. Faith in God is mocked. The excesses and exaggerations of political correctness in these countries indeed leads to serious consideration for the legitimization of parties that promote the propaganda of pedophilia. The people in many European states are actually ashamed of their religious affiliations and indeed frightened by them. Christian holidays and celebrations are abolished or neutrally renamed as if one were ashamed of those Christian holidays. With this method, one hides away the deeper moral values of these celebrations. And these countries try to force this model onto other countries globally. I'm deeply convinced that this is a direct way to the degeneration and primitivization of culture. What can be a better evidence for the moral crisis of a human society in the West than the loss of its reproductive function? You know, we have bullet replacement. And today, nearly all developed Western countries cannot survive reproductively, not even with the help of immigrants. Without the moral values that are rooted in Christianity and other world religions, without rules and moral values which are formed and being developed over millennia, people will inevitably lose their human dignity and become brutes. And we think it is right and natural to defend and preserve these moral Christian values. One has to respect the right of every minority to self-determination, but at the same time, there cannot and must not be any doubt about the values of the majority. And at the same time, as this process at a national level in the West, we observe on an international level the attempts to create a unipolar, unified model of the world, to relativize it. In such a unipolar, unified world, there's no place for sovereign states. Such a world needs merely vassals. From a historical perspective, such a unipolar world
to national identity is related to the global developments. Here they are related to moral and geopolitical aspects. We witness many Euro-Atlantic countries are refusing, forgetting their roots, including the values of Christianity, which formed the basis of the civilization. They are renouncing any ethical basis, any identity, national, religious, or even gender ones. They are following the policy which equals families with many children and one-gender families. Excesses of political correctness lead us when the parties pursue propaganda of pedophilia. Representatives in many Western countries are afraid of mentioning their gender. They even are canceling some festivities, and they are hiding the basis of such festivities, and they are trying to impose this model to anyone. I am convinced this leads us to degradation and primitivization, to deep moral crisis.
What can more testify to the moral crisis of the human social as not the deletion of the ability to reproduce itself, but now the most of developed countries can't reproduce themselves, including through migration. Without values inclined in Christianity and other world religions, without the moral norms which formed through centuries, we can just lose human dignity. And we believe that these values should be protected. That's correct and that's dignified. We need to respect the minorities, but we need to respect the majority as well and do not put under doubt its right. We see the attempts to revive the unipolar system of the world, to disperse the institutions of international law, and to this unified, unipolar world, the independent states are bad. It needs servants. But we cannot refuse to have our historic and identity in face.
This is a very, very powerful speech by Putin. And one that I think deserves a lot more attention, and it's certainly something that I'm going to give attention to. I'm going to try to circulate this as widely as possible. And he makes some very, very good points, among them being the importance of having children. A civilization that cannot reproduce itself, or at least to replacement level, is sick. Now, this is not in the West. It's not because of disease or a terrible war or something like that. it is a complete breakdown of morals, and much of that having to do with identity. We are ashamed or have rejected our Christian heritage. We are ashamed of and or have rejected our racial heritage. We have bought the most preposterous defamations and lies circulated by our enemies. I was talking to my good friend Brad Love today, and Brad said, why doesn't the press come out with it and explain that Bernie Sanders is a communist? He's not a socialist. He's not a just kind of leans to the left. And it's interesting that if a person in the nationalist movement had the background that Mr. Sanders did in terms of previous involvement in what might be loosely called radical politics, this person would never be allowed to forget it. For instance, my good friend, Representative Dr. David Duke, has often joked that he intends to change his name. I said, well, David, what are you going to change it to? Well, he says, I'm going to change it to former Ku Klux Klan leader. That's my first name. David will be my second name. Duke will be my family name. And I said, well, why would you do that? He said, the media says that all the time. Now, David Duke, who's now in his late 60s, has not been a member of the Klan since he was 23. That's like two-thirds of a lifetime ago. Isn't it odd that he has to be smeared with an identification that he himself moved on from? It's not that he actually rejected the Klan. He didn't say, oh, they're evil or anything like that, but he basically had come to the conclusion that it's not saleable anymore, that the media had done such a job on it that it was hard to convince people that, no, actually, we're good. And in fact, it might be better simply to move on. Anyway, what about Bernie Sanders? The record of avowed socialist senator and presidential candidate Bernie Sanders continues to demonstrate that he's been a longtime vocal supporter and fellow traveler with communists and Marxists. You know, not just socialists. The Washington Examiner recalled that during the 1980s, Sanders, at the time the socialist mayor of Burlington, Vermont, was investigated by the FBI for his ties to Marxist groups. While Sanders, quote, has always played down the extent of his involvement with the Socialist Workers' Party, or SWP, which included radicals who praised the Soviet Union and Cuban communists, and has denied ever being a member, Sanders' personal files from the 1980s, archived at the University of Vermont, show that he supported and campaigned for the Communist Socialist Workers' Party and maintained a close relationship with its senior members. And while the Democratic Party worked hard to get Jimmy Carter elected in 1980 and unsuccessfully campaigned for his vice president, Walter Mondale, in 1984, through the Reagan years, Sanders was very busy for the Marxist Socialist Workers' Party candidate, who touted radical reforms destructive to American interests. In 1980, Sanders, quote, proudly endorsed and supported Socialist Workers' Party candidate Andrew Pulley, who encouraged U.S. soldiers to shoot their commanding officers. At the time, Sanders also confirmed that, quote, I fully support the Socialist Workers' Party's continued defense of the Cuban Revolution. In April, Fox News reported on a recently discovered 1986 video of a speech during which Sanders recalls, quote, being very excited when former Cuban dictator Fidel Castro made the revolution in Cuba. Sanders said, quote, it just seemed right and appropriate. The poor people were rising up against the rather ugly rich people. During his 1980 presidential campaign, Pulley called for the abolition of the U.S. military and nationalization of virtually all private industry, as well as the abolition of the military budget and the establishment of solidarity with the revolutionary regimes in Iran, Nicaragua, at that time Grenada, and Cuba, according to the Examiner, citing a report by the New York Times from that era. Additionally, according to the Examiner, quote, Pulley That's the Socialist Workers Party candidate whom Sanders endorsed. Pulley hailed the Cuban Revolution as a model for the United States and claimed that racism had been abolished on the island. His running mate, Matilda Zimmerman, described the contention that Cubans lived under a dictatorship as American propaganda. Well, I've been to Cuba, and it's not American propaganda. It is a dictatorship. 4 years later, Sanders backed and campaigned for the Socialist Workers Party presidential nominee, Mel Mason, a former Black Panther, saying it was important for there to be fundamental alternatives to the capitalist ideology. The Examiner article recalled that the same Socialist Workers Party that Sanders so ardently endorsed, quote, has a long history of radicalism, starting at its beginning in 1938, when it was founded by the devotees of Leon Trotsky, the Jewish communist leader who broke away from Stalin in the 30s, and whose real name was Lev Davidovich Bronstein. Trotsky's legacy lived on, not only in the Soviet Union and the developing countries, but in the United States, where it attracted trade unionists, academics, bohemians, and an ambitious Vermont mayor, namely Bernie Sanders. In his 1984 endorsement of the Socialist Worker Party's presidential candidate, Mel Mason, Sanders wrote, quote, at a time when the Democratic and Republican parties are intellectually and spiritually bankrupt, it is imperative for radical voices to be heard which offer fundamental alternatives to capitalist ideology. Now, incidentally, Bernie Sanders, who is now fairly wealthy, is also Jewish. Writing in the New York Post in 2016, columnist Paul Sperry suggested that some of Sanders' past ties actually qualified him to be called a communist. For example, wrote Sperry in 1964, while a student at the University of Chicago, quote, Sanders joined the Young People's Socialist League, the youth wing of the Socialist Party USA. He also organized for a communist front, the United Packing House Workers Union, which at the time was under investigation by the House Committee on Un-American Activities. After graduating with a degree in political science and moving to Vermont, wrote Sperry, Sanders, quote, headed the American People's History Society, an organ for Marxist propaganda. There he produced a glowing documentary on the life of socialist revolutionary Eugene Debs, who was jailed for espionage during the Red Scare just after the First World War and hailed by the Bolsheviks as America's greatest Marxist. Elected mayor of Burlington, Vermont in 1981, Sanders, quote, restricted property rights for landlords, set price controls, and raised property taxes to pay for communal land trusts, recalled Sperry. And in 1985, he traveled to Managua to celebrate the rise to power of the Marxist-Leninist Sandinista government. He called it a heroic revolution. Well, of course, now, 34 years later, it's obvious that it's become an extremely brutal and corrupt regime. And Sperry's article continued, Sanders also adopted a Soviet sister city outside Moscow and honeymooned with his second wife in the USSR. He put up a Soviet flag in his office, shocking even the Birkenstock-wearing local liberals. At the time, the evil empire was on the march around the world and threatening the U.S. with nuclear annihilation. Now, this is still in the 80s, and when as the radical mayor of Burlington, Vermont, he even had a Soviet flag in his office and went to Moscow or to Russia on his honeymoon. That's what, for the time, was very unusual. Russia was not considered a hot vacation spot. Let's put it that way. It was not considered a place that, you know, if you're wealthy, you might go to Europe to see Paris or Italy. Not so wealthy, you might go to the Caribbean or Mexico, but to go to Moscow would suggest a strong ideological commitment. Why is this not exposed? And one wonders why his opponents in the Democratic Party, and they're not all leftists, don't bring this out. 1988 appears to be the year that Sanders decided to begin subtly distancing himself from his Marxist roots, as he publicly endorsed Jesse Jackson in the Democratic Party's presidential primary. 2 years later, Sanders was elected into the U.S. Senate as an independent, and since then he has been hard at work publicly massaging his radical socialist Marxist record into a presidential platform palatable to gullible, uninformed millennial voters. I think this is an extremely profound a commentary, and that's what that's what has been done. And again, a lot of obloquy redounds on the mass media. Why are people not told this? Well, you want to wish him well. That's Canada's conservative leader. We're heading into an election in the middle of October of this year. And the natural opposition, normally, to the governing Liberals, and that's now headed by the trust fund kid, Justin Trudeau, who is a one-worlder, who is an anti-nationalist, an anti-racist, a pro-homosexual, wildly pro-abortion. I'll come back to the conservative leader, who's not much of a leader, in just a minute. Last week, Vice President Pence visited Canada and tried to be as friendly and positive as possible, stressing what he saw as the values of the NAFTA treaty, North American Free Trade Treaty, that's recently the second incarnation has recently been concluded and has been ratified by Canada and is yet to be ratified by Mexico or the United States. Anyway, but Trudeau took the opportunity to repay Vice President Pence's friendliness with a griping concern about the erosion of women's rights in the United States. And he was referencing recent state changes in state law in places like Alabama and Georgia, and Missouri, restricting abortions. And Justin Trudeau lectured, and he knew he was being offensive, of course. Vice President Pence is a very publicly religious person, a staunch Catholic, and is extremely faithful to his wife. In fact, he has a rule that he will not eat supper alone with another woman unless his wife is with him. Now, you know, whether one would go to that extent or not is, you know, a different issue. But and so Trudeau takes the opportunity to lecture Vice President Pence on the fact that Canada, he supports, absolutely supports, a woman's right to choose. Well, bully for Trudeau. This has nothing to do with Canada-U.S. relations. Canada has no say in state laws in the United States that don't affect Canadians. This is complete gratuitous meddling to try to make himself look good with his radical, life-hating feminist supporters. Well, Trudeau says he believes in the absolute right of the woman to control her body. That ignores that other creatures may have rights, in this case, an unborn child. The woman's right to control her body, by which he means an abortion, and he's wildly pro-abortion, also impacts something else. I mean, someone else, the unborn child, and you might also say impacts the father. And while a woman obviously should have a right to considerable say over her own body, when that say impacts, or in the case of the unborn child, snuffs out that child's rights, it's gone. Certainly be a matter for some discussion, one would think. Trudeau pompously says he's for a woman's right to choose. Well, interestingly, he's not for the right of elected members or even potential candidates in his own party to choose. that is to choose if they make the wrong choice. They must be pro-abortion without question, or they'll be kicked out of the caucus, and they will not, or they will not be allowed to run if they've not already been elected. That's what a fanatic he is. Okay, so definitely, if you say Canada needs a change, absolutely, I agree. Now, there are some other alternatives to Trudeau, but one is the leader of the Conservative Party. Right now, they're ahead in the polls. So, okay, so far, so good. But Andrew Scheer is a bit of a wimpy individual. And although he has taken a good stand, a strong stand against the illegals that have been pouring across the U.S. border in along onto the Roxham Road in Quebec, over 40,000 have been allowed to scam the system. Scheer is running scared because of the mass media, and once again threw a good man under the bus. This is from today's Globe and Mail. Conservative leader Andrew Scheer is facing pressure to keep his promise to weed out intolerance from his party. What's intolerance? Your strong opinion is my version of intolerance. And impose stiffer punishment on a member of parliament who publicly quoted from the manifesto written by the Christchurch gunman last... Oh my God, he quoted from the manifesto. Let's all have a heart attack. Well, you want to read the context. On Saturday, Mr. Scheer announced that he had removed Conservative Member of Parliament Michael Cooper from the Justice Committee after a tense exchange between the St. Albert Edmonton Member of Parliament and Alberta Muslim Affairs Council President Faisal Khan Suri at a committee meeting last week. In the statement announcing the punishment, Mr. Scheer said it was, quote, unacceptable for Mr. Scheer to have quoted from the manifesto written by the shooter who killed 51 people at two mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand. So he said it was unacceptable. Why would it be unacceptable to quote from it? Why? And this is how wacko things have become. Well, let's see. How did he quote from it? However, Mr. Suri, he's the Muslim, or head of the, actually he's the head of the Alberta Muslim Affairs Council, called for Mr. Cooper's ouster from the Conservative caucus, and not just from the Justice Committee, pointing to Mr. Scheer's recent speech in which the Conservative leader denounced intolerance, racism, intolerance, racism, and extremism of any kind. Honestly, I mean, you'd like to think words don't mean anything. You know, he just says these things, or you'd hope that, but you might not be right. So the poor pathetic Scheer had denounced intolerance. Well, what's intolerance? If I don't believe that Sam and Sasha, but Sasha's a man's name, incidentally, can marry, am I being intolerant? If I think that the only real marriage is Adam and Eve, and I believe that actually Andrew Scheer believes this too, the only real marriage is between a man and a woman, is that being intolerant? I don't know. Okay, now it's intolerance and racism. Oh yeah, racism. Gotta attack racism. Well, what is racism? Well, racism quite often is anything an opponent says it is. If you're proud of your old people, is that racism? Well, I don't want my people to be swamped by the third world. Is that racism? Or a black Jamaican who says, well, I don't mind white tourists, but I don't want 5 million whites coming to live in Jamaica, then it would no longer be a black island. Is he being a racist? I don't know. No, wait, of course, I do know. That's not being a racist, but that's what we would be told. I'm sorry, it's only if whites stick up for themselves that it's racist. Okay, what is deeply concerning is the fact that Mr. Cooper had the manifesto in his possession and read it in a parliamentary committee as a federal member of parliament. Mr. Suri said, this is a document from a white extremist who murdered 51 innocent people. That is concerning. Well, maybe what should be concerning is that this foreigner would be lecturing us as to how we should behave ourselves. I have no problem with somebody having read the Christchurch Manifesto. I mean, how else are you going to learn what motivates people? Well, you can't read that. Well, why not? Doesn't he have to agree with it? And I have read it. And I agree with his analysis. I do not agree with much of his politics, and I do not agree with the shooting. I made that quite clear, personally. Anyway. But it gets even more ludicrous when you find out exactly what it was the Member of Parliament, Michael Cooper, actually did. Mr. Suri, that's the Muslim, was one of six witnesses at a Justice Committee hearing on online hate last Tuesday. In his opening statement, he said, hate speech on the internet is an enabler, a precursor, and a deep contributor to not just real-life hate, but to murder. In particular, Mr. Suri referred to the recent attack in places of worship before laying out the online history of the gunman who who had shot up a mosque in Quebec City a couple of years ago. Alexandre Bissonnette, he was the shooter, repeatedly sought content about anti-immigrant, alt-right, and conservative commentators, U.S. President Donald Trump, and about Muslims, immigrants living in Quebec. When it was his turn, okay, that's what the Muslims said. So, I mean, conservative commentators, the alt-right should not be allowed on the internet? Was that what he was saying? When it was his turn to speak, Mr. Cooper said that Mr. Suri should be ashamed for the comments that link conservatism with violent extremist attacks. They have no foundation, they're defamatory, and they diminish Mr. Suri's credibility as a witness, Member of Parliament Michael Cooper said. Mr. Cooper went on to read a portion of the manifesto in which the Christchurch gunman points to his admiration for the political values of the Chinese government. The document was banned in New Zealand after the attack. The very fact that he had read that apparently one short passage brought all sorts of condemnations from members of parliament and from Mr. Suri. Well, what was wrong with reading that passage? He's suggesting that, far from being a conservative, the shooter was, among other things, an admirer of communist China. And he declared himself to having been an eco-fascist. Well, Michael Cooper wasn't saying, the member of parliament, he wasn't saying, I agree with him. He's just saying to link conservatism or conservative commentators with people who shoot up mosques is just plain wrong. But you can't say that, apparently. It scares me that Andrew Scheer, the leader of the Conservative Party, who has kicked Mr. Cooper off the committee, is either so stupid or so weak. And, you know, we're never going to take our countries back if we're not able to break the control of the mass media and to stand up to them. Well, Paul Fromm, you're on the fighting side of me. I'm going to take my my musical break now and I'm going to play some Hank Jr. for you. Because he was in the shadow of his father for many years, but came into his own and some songs with some really great lyrics. Here are a few of them. Hank Williams Jr.
But then just like some of those good old songs. Every time I hear that song, I think of
song, Hank Williams Jr. talking about some of his father's behavior. There's another song that I hope you like. I don't care. Tomorrow never comes. I think Hank Williams Jr. is underestimated as a country and western talent, and glad to play some of his songs tonight.
I don't care if tomorrow never comes.
I don't care, tomorrow never comes. And we have another song here by Hank Dream. That and another night. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the Fighting Side of Me. Back with you tomorrow night. Same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada. The Maple Leaf Forever.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm. Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together. The thistle, shamrock, rose and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf.